Namagyanatamindasya janajana sulakaya taksu sumilatam jena tasmai sri grave namaha sri chaitanya manupistam stapitam jena bhutale sayam prakaramayam dadati sapanantikam vanja kopatu vyascha kripa sindhu vai vyascha Tityanam Pavane Bhyo Paishname Bhyo Namah. It works. Yesterday we heard part of Yamaraj's instructions to the Yamadutas prior in the beginning part of the chapter. Yamaraj described who those great personalities were, the Vishnu Dutas, and their Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. After establishing that he was the Lord, yesterday we heard Yamaraj explain Dhamman tu shakshad bhagavat pranitam, that he is the Lord and actual religious principles, they come from him. Actually speaking, Yamaraj is here describing the same or answering the same questions that the Vishnudutas put to the Yamadutas in the earlier chapter, but he's answering them in the highest way, with more knowledge than they had, more knowledge of the Supreme Lord as well as the deepest principles of religion. So religious principles ultimately are enacted by the Lord himself. He is the ultimate authority in what is religion, what are the religious principles. And these instructions, which from the Lord, or principles from the Lord, they're very hard to understand just by reading the Vedic scriptures. But there is another way to understand them. So in the next verse, Yamaraj explained the other process of understanding the highest principles of religion, and that process is following the Mahajans, and he named the 12 different Mahajans, that they know these Mahajans, or great personalities whom we should follow, they know the actual principles of religion. Those principles of religion that we learn by following them are called Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad means of the Supreme Lord, the religion, the Dharma of the Supreme Lord. And basically it means, Bhagavad Dharma means giving the soul, giving himself into the hands, at the lotus feet of the Lord for his pleasure. This is actually the natural position of the soul. And this actually, the soul's attempt to do this, or the soul's doing this, is the highest principles of religion. Surrender. Sarvadamam pratyajam amekam charanam pratyajam. So, in the succeeding verses that we read yesterday, 22, 23, and 24, Yamaraj directly explains what Bhagavad Dharma is and what those Mahajanas teach. Etavan eva lokesmin pumsadama parasmriti smrita bhakti yoga bhagavati tanama grahanadavi. Devotional service, bhakti yoga bhagavati. Devotional service, or connecting to the Lord through devotional worship, giving service. This beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the ultimate religious principle for the living entity in human society. And then as an example of that, in text 23, Yamaraj says, my dear servants, he's talking to the Yamadutas, just see how glorious is the chanting of the holy name. Sinful Ajmil just chanted it one time, and not only did he just chant it one time, he was referring in his mind to his son that caused him to remember the Supreme Lord, but yet he was saved from the ropes of death, from being dragged, the soul himself being dragged from the body. Just see the power of the holy name. Just see the power of devotional service. Therefore, practically speaking, Yamaraja's conclusion is given in the 24th verse, because putting this verse and what we've been hearing in the perspective of the original question asked by Maharaj Prakrit to Sukadeva Goswami about the means of atonement for sinful activities so one doesn't have to suffer hellishly. And this is Yamaraj himself speaking, because he's the one, like the judge, who ordains the suffering of the living entities. So the judge is saying what the highest principle that he's going to judge by. Therefore, he says, it should be understood that one is easily relieved from all sinful reactions by chanting the holy name of the Lord and chanting of his qualities and activities. All sinful reactions relieved. This is the only process recommended for relief from sinful reactions. Even if the Lord, if one chants the holy name of the Lord with improper pronunciation, he will achieve relief from material bondage if he chants without offenses. And this example, we see sinful Ajamil being freed from those sins. And then on the other side, after explaining or reaching the conclusion, Yamaraj explains that this conclusion is very difficult to reach, even for great sages such as Yajñavalkya and Jaimini, who have attachment to performing sacrifices other than the holy names, the Vedic ritualistic sacrifices. So because of that, which causes a dullness of the intelligence, these great souls are not even attracted to the Sankirtan movement. Rather, they become entangled in other things. Now we'll read today's verses, which will take us to the end of this chapter. And then we'll go back and read some of the purports, because now Yamaraj is going to reach his conclusion. Maybe we can put the volume down. Considering all these points, which points? How the prime methodology of atonement, of removal of sinful activities, the best, the unequaled, unparalleled method, is devotional service, which Namagrahanandati begins with the chanting of the Lord's holy names. Considering all these points, therefore, intelligent men decide to solve all problems. We have so many problems. But intelligent men decide to solve all problems by adopting the devotional service of chanting the holy name of the Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart and who is a mine of all auspicious qualities. A mine of all auspicious qualities. Such persons are not within my jurisdiction for punishment, Yamaraj says. He is the punisher of sinful souls. But these personalities who have taken shelter of the Lord, they are not to be punished by Yamaraj. They are beyond his jurisdiction. Generally, they never commit sinful activities. But even if by mistake or because of bewilderment or illusion, they sometimes commit sinful acts, they are protected from sinful reactions because they always chant the Hare Krishna mantra. My dear servants, he's speaking to the Yamadutas who just underwent a very heavy experience for them. They tried, but was thwarted, to take the soul of Ajamil from his body. So now he's going to give them some direct instructions. Do not approach such devotees who have chanted the holy names. For they are fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are equal to everyone. And their narrations are sung by the demigods and the inhabitants of Siddhaloka. In other words, they are glorified even by exalted personalities. So stay away from them. Don't consider them sinful. Don't consider them suitable to be punished. Don't consider them as ones who you have a responsibility to deal with. No. Please do not even go near them. So not only will they, these personalities, not have to suffer in hellish conditions, they won't even see the Yamadutas. Yamaraj himself is instructing the Yamadutas, please do not even go near them. They are always protected by the club, gada, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, Lord Brahma and I, and even the time factor, are not competent to chastise them. Paramhamsas are exalted persons who have no taste for material enjoyment and who drink the honey of the Lord's lotus feet. My dear servants, bring to me for punishment only persons who are averse to the taste of that honey, who have no taste for the honey of the service of the Lord's lotus feet. Bring to me those persons who don't wish to engage in devotional service, who do not associate with paramhamsas, and who are attached to family life and worldly enjoyment, which form the path to hell. My dear servants, please bring to me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy names and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once, and whose heads do not bow down even once before Lord Krishna. Send me those who do not perform their duties toward Vishnu, which are the only duties in human life. Please bring me all such fools and rascals. So who shouldn't they touch? The Yamadutas, because the Vishnudutas originally asked the Yamadutas who should be punished and who shouldn't be punished by Yamaraj. And here is the real answer. Who shouldn't be punished are those who engage in devotional service and chant the holy names. Who should be punished? Those who think that material enjoyment is the purpose of life and who have an aversion for good association, who have an aversion for devotional service, and who don't chant the holy names. Bring me them. I'm eager to see such persons. Bring me those persons, Yamaraj says. Then, considering that his servants have committed a mistake in taking responsibility for that, Yamaraj speaks as follows, and he begs pardon from the Lord. He says, "Oh my Lord, my servants have surely committed a great offense by arresting a Vaishnava such as Ajamil. Oh Narayan, O supreme and oldest person, please forgive us. Because of our ignorance, we failed to recognize Ajamil as a servant of your lordship, and thus we have certainly committed a great offense. Therefore, with folded hands, we beg your pardon. My Lord, since you are supremely merciful and are always full of good qualities, please pardon us. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you." So that ends Sukadev Goswami's narration to Maharaj Prickett of the discussion between Yamaraj and the Yamadutas. Now Sukadev is going to speak further. Sukadev Goswami continued, "My dear King, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is able to uproot even the reactions of the greatest sins. Therefore, the chanting of the Sankirtan movement is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. Please try to understand this so that others will take it seriously. One who constantly hears and chants the holy name of the Lord and hears and chants about his activities can very easily attain the platform of pure devotional service, which can cleanse the dirt from one's heart. One cannot achieve such purification merely by observing vows and performing Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Devotees who always lick the honey from the lotus feet of Lord Krishna do not care at all for material activities which are performed under the three modes of material nature and which bring only misery. Indeed, devotees never give up the lotus feet of Krishna to return to material activities. Others, however, who are addicted to Vedic rituals because they have neglected the service of the Lord's lotus feet, are enchanted by lusty desires, sometimes perform acts of atonement. Nevertheless, being incompletely purified, they return to sinful activities again and again. So thereby, Sukadeva Goswami answers this question about atonement, and in doing so, while describing the greatest form of atonement, he describes the glories of the holy names of the Lord and of the Lord's devotional service. And the last two verses end this chapter. After hearing from the mouths of their master about the extraordinary glories of the Lord and his name, fame, and attributes, the Yamadutas were struck with wonder. Since then, as soon as they see a devotee, they fear him and dare not look at him again. When the great sage Agastya, the son of Kumbha, was residing in the Malaya hills and worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I, Sukadeva Goswami is describing, approached him and he explained to me this confidential history. Just as a matter of further glorifying the Lord's holy names and the chanting of Sankirtan, especially the congregational chanting of the Lord's holy name and devotional service, I'd like to read one of the verses I was looking for but couldn't find yesterday because the book wasn't here. The last verse of the book, because it is always considered that the last thing said is especially important. It's the last point, because that point is made very strongly. It's the last thing you remember. The first point is important when analyzing scriptures to see what the essence of the message is. One looks at the first point, the last point, and what is in the middle sometimes, and what is consistently mentioned throughout. So here is the very, very important last verse of the 12th canto. This is from chapter 13, verse 23. Final verse is, I'll read the last two verses. Bhave bhave yata bhakti padayos tavajayate tata kure svadevasa natas tvam no yata prabhu. O Lord of Lords, O Master, please grant us pure devotional service at your lotus feet, life after life. Nama sankirtanam yasya sarva papa panasanam pranamo dukasamanas tam namami harim param. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Hari, the congregational chanting of whose holy names destroys all sinful reactions, and the offering of obeisances unto whom relieves all material suffering. So, such sweet glorifications by Sutta Goswami of devotional service and of chanting the holy names. So now let's read some of Prabhupada's very important purports to some of the verses that we read today. And this, as you may have noted, ends the pastime narrated of Ajamil. So, considering all points, the point of the glories and the potency of devotional service, which is initiated by chanting the Lord's holy names. So, Yamaraj concludes, therefore intelligent persons, truly intelligent persons, they adopt the devotional service of the Lord by chanting the Lord's holy names. So when we consider who is intelligent and who is actually intelligent and who is not intelligent, we usually think that the PhD scholar professors are so intelligent, but in Prabhupada's purport he says they are not the actual intelligent ones, even if they in a scholarly way study the shastras, because they don't understand actually who the Supreme Lord is. Therefore Prabhupada concludes, or just mirroring the verse, is that the devotee who worships the Lord and with devotional service, he is actually intelligent. So towards the end of his purport, Prabhupada says, why is he intelligent? Because he frees himself from all sins through his devotion. And not only that, he develops his love for Krishna, which is the purpose of existence, of his existence. Prabhupada's purport concludes, a pure devotee is one whose intelligence is clear. When you think of something that's clear, what do you think of? Clear, crystal clear water. So you might also think of a clear crystal. Or a, what else? I think of water. Clear intelligence, what does that mean? That there's no fog, there's no dirt, there's nothing covering it. Actual intelligence is manifest. Simply, purely, the mind is peaceful and the intelligence is manifest. So a pure devotee is one whose intelligence is clear. He is truly thoughtful because he engages in the service of the Lord, not as a matter of show, but with love, with his mind, words, and body. Non-devotees make a show of religion, but it is not very effective, because although they ostentatiously attend a temple or church, they are thinking of something else. Prabhupada is criticizing me here. Real devotion is not cheap. Non-devotees may make a show of religion, but it is not very effective, because although they ostentatiously, so everyone can see them, attend a temple or church, they are thinking of something else. They are not thinking of loving service to the Lord. Such persons are neglecting their religious duty and are punishable by Yamaraj. They are thinking, perhaps, that they are performing their religious duty by attending. But because they are thinking of something else, they are not thinking devotionally towards the Lord, they are due to punishment. But a devotee who commits sinful acts, which he may do unwillingly or accidentally because of his former habits, is excused. That is the value of the Sankirtan movement. In the next verse, describes who is to be brought before Yamaraj, and those who do not surrender to the Lord's lotus feet are to be brought. Prabhupada's purport. In effect, Yamaraj warned his servants, my dear servants, despite what you may have done previously to disturb the devotees, henceforward you should stop. The actions of devotees who have surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord and who constantly chant the holy name of the Lord are praised by the demigods and the residents of Siddhaloka. Siddhaloka is the planet of perfected living beings. Those devotees, the devotees, are so respectable and exalted that Lord Vishnu personally protects them with the club in his hand. Therefore, regardless of what you have done this time, henceforward you should not approach such devotees. Otherwise, you will be killed by the club of Lord Vishnu. This is my warning. Lord Vishnu has a club and a chakra to punish non-devotees. Do not risk punishment by attempting to disturb the devotees. Not to speak of you, even if Lord Brahma or I were to punish them, Yamaraj says. This is all Prabhupada's paraphrasing this verse. All this is in quotations, what the Yamaraj is actually saying to the Yamadutas. Even if Lord Brahma or I were to punish them, Lord Vishnu would punish us. Therefore, do not disturb the devotees any further. So, such inspiration to become devotees and to serve the devotees. Who should be brought? So that's who shouldn't be brought to the Yamadutas. Who should be brought? Prabhupada's purport. After warning the Yamadutas not to approach the devotees, Yamaraj now indicates who is to be brought before him. He specifically advises the Yamadutas to bring him the materialistic persons who are attached to household life merely for sex. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yan Maitunadi Grihamedi Sukham Hituchham. People are attached to household life or sex only. They are always harassed in many ways by their material engagements, and their only happiness is that after working very hard all day, at night they sleep and indulge in sex. Nidraya riyate naktam vyavayena chayavaya. At night, materialistic householders sleep or indulge in sex life. Diva charte haya rajad kutumba baranena va. During the day they are busy trying to find out where money is, and if they get money they spend it to maintain their families. This is practically everyone in the world. Yamaraj specifically advises his servants to bring these persons to him for punishment and not to bring the devotees who always lick the honey at the lotus feet of the Lord, who are equal to everyone, and who try to preach Krishna consciousness because of sympathy for all living entities. Devotees are not liable to punishment by Yamaraj, but persons who have no information of Krishna consciousness cannot be protected by the material life of so-called family enjoyment. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Deha Patra Kalatradeshu Atma Sanyasa Satsvapi Tesham Pramata Nidhanam Pashanapi Napashyati. Such persons complacently believe that their nations, communities, or families can protect them, unaware that all such fallible soldiers will be destroyed in due course of time. Just like Ajamil, when he was dying, what did he do? He called for his son, Narayan, a little boy, because that's where his affection was. And in one sense, that's who he was taking shelter of. And that's a good example of what materialistic persons do when their minds are fearful and disturbed. They take shelter. Pashanapina Pashyati. They're bewildered. Tesham Pramata Nidanam. They're bewildered and they take shelter of things that actually have no capacity to give shelter. So we, who are aspiring for devotional service, need constant practicing to always take shelter of where the shelter really is. And that is Krishna's lotus feet. Such persons complacently believe that their nations, communities, or families can protect them, unaware that all such fallible soldiers will be destroyed in due course of time. In conclusion, one should try to associate with persons who engage in devotional service 24 hours a day. Yamaraj continues, bring me those persons who don't chant. who don't bow down, who don't perform their duties to Vishnu. Bring me those persons. Bring me such fools and rascals. Then he considered himself an offender. So therefore, he apologized on behalf of his servants. Very important short purport Prabhupada gives here. Lord Yamaraj took upon himself the responsibility for the offense committed by his servants. If the servant of an establishment makes a mistake, the establishment takes responsibility for it. Although Yamaraj is above offenses, his servants, practically with his permission, went to arrest Ajamil, which was a great offense. The Nyaya Shastra confirms, Britya Paradhe Swamino Danda. If a servant makes a mistake, the master is punishable because he is responsible for the offense. Taking this seriously, Yamaraj, along with his servants, prayed with folded hands to be excused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Then Sukadeva Goswami glorifies the chanting of the holy names as the most auspicious activity in the universe. And here is Prabhupada's purport. We should note that although Ajamil chanted the name of Narayan imperfectly, he was delivered from all sinful reactions. The chanting of the holy name is so auspicious that it can free everyone from the reactions of sinful activities. One should not conclude that one may continue to sin with the intention of chanting Hare Krishna to neutralize the reactions. Rather, one should be very careful to be free from all sins and never think of counteracting sinful activities by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, for this is another offense. If by chance a devotee accidentally performs some sinful activity, the Lord will excuse him, but one should not intentionally perform sinful activities and then think, oh, I'll become purified by chanting. The next verse describes how important the chanting of the holy names is and compares it so much more powerful. One who constantly hears and chants the holy name of the Lord and hears and chants about his activities can very easily attain the platform of pure devotional service, which can cleanse the dirt from one's heart. One cannot achieve such purification merely by observing vows and performing ritualistic ceremonies. Prabhupada's purport. So remember, the question that was originally asked was about atonement. Prabhupada's purport. One may very easily practice chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord and thus become ecstatic in spiritual life. Padma Purana states, Namaparada yuktanam namanyeva harantyagam avishranti prayuktani tanyeva arta karani cha. Even if one chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra offensively, one can avoid offenses by continuously chanting without deviation. One who becomes accustomed to this practice will always remain in pure transcendental position, in a pure transcendental position. So what is being asked? What is being recommended?
To keep chanting.
Yes, and you know, there's two ways to give an instruction. One is called vyatirek, which is negative, to say it in the negative. What you shouldn't do and what you should do. So if you should always chant, what shouldn't you do? Yes, you should not stop. You should not chant. Should chant and shouldn't not chant. So both sides are there. So you get scores in the middle of the instructions. We should always chant and we should never not chant. If we do this, our life will be perfect. Sukadeva Goswami One who becomes accustomed to this practice will always remain in a pure transcendental position, untouchable by sinful reactions. Sukadeva Goswami especially requested King Pariksit to note this fact very carefully. There is no profit, however, in executing the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. By performing such activities, one may go to the higher planetary systems. But as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Chine Punye Martilokam Vishanti. When the period of one's enjoyment in the heavenly planets is terminated because of the limited extent of the results of one's pious activities, one must return to earth. Thus, there is no use in endeavoring to travel up and down in the universe. It is better to chant the holy name of the Lord so that one may become fully purified and eligible to return back home, back to Godhead. That is the aim of life, and that is the perfection of life. And the last longish purport, not very long, one paragraph of Prabhupada's in this chapter. A devotee's duty is to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. One may sometimes chant with offenses and sometimes without offenses. But if one seriously adopts this process, he will achieve perfection. But if one, which he will achieve perfection, which cannot be achieved through Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of atonement. Persons who are attached to the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies but do not believe in devotional service, who advise atonement but do not appreciate the chanting of the Lord's holy name, fail to achieve the highest perfection. Devotees, therefore, being completely detached from material enjoyment, never give up Krishna consciousness for Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Those who are attached to Vedic ritualistic ceremonies because of lusty desires are subjected to the tribulations of material existence again and again. Maharaj Pariksit has compared their activities to kunjara shocha, the bathing of an elephant. So we've just completed the pastime of Ajmer, one of the most wonderful pastimes, verses and purports in the Bhagavatam. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
When Ajmer met his son Narayan, did he know that renaming Narayan was the holy name of the Lord?
He certainly knew that Narayan is the name of the Lord. Yes, because everyone in the Vedic culture knows that. And this is the tradition in the Vedic culture to give one's children a name that is a name of the Lord. So, therefore, being in that culture is a benefit, even though one may not be very enlightened. Because one has tendencies and habits and customs that will help one. Thank you. Any other questions?
When was it? What time was the Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled?
Just at the conjunction, more or less, between Kali Yuga and the Yuga prior to it, Dwapara Yuga. Just after Krishna left the planet, then Suta Goswami described Suta. There was a just after Krishna had left the planet. Suta described the Bhagavatam to the sages of Namasharanya, and Vyasadeva then quickly compiled it into what we know as the Bhagavatam. So first, Vyasadeva, after hearing the instructions of Narada Muni, he meditated. This is described in the first canto. He meditated and realized the truth. And this truth had already been spoken by the Lord to Brahma. in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, in the ninth chapter, called the Chatusloki Bhagavatam. In four verses, the whole Bhagavatam was described. Then he, Brahma, told Narada Muni to expand it further, and Narada did so into 10 topics. And then this truth was basically given to Srila Vyasadeva, who realized it in the trance of meditation. And then Vyasadeva taught it to his son Sukadeva Goswami, who spoke it to Prickit Maharaj. And Suta Goswami was present when he spoke it to Prickit Maharaj. And he spoke it to the sages of Namasharanya. And then Srila Vyasadeva put it all together. So it was shortly after Krishna left the planet. Any other? Yep.
So even if we're thinking simple things or having trouble with trying to purify our minds, just keep chanting, right? That's it.
Yes. That's.
So what about like in India, there's a lot of devotees that chant, and then later on you see them down the fish market, buying fish, something like that, I heard. So, but they know the rules, or is it just like they're just like hanging out chanting? They don't really know
they
why
don't,
they're doing it. Are they getting benefits still?
Yeah, there's some benefit, but maybe. But committing, it depends on their consciousness. If they know the rules, and if they're breaking the rules, sinning in that way, thinking that all just chanting removes the sin, that is a great offense. And the holy names won't purify one if one is doing that. But most people, they don't chant. It's not that everyone is sitting 23 hours a day chanting Hare Krishna, and then the rest of the time they're spending hanging out at the fish market. Well, most people are just enjoying, trying their best to enjoy life. But there is a hypocrisy present. If one, there's one story how Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was in Navadvip. And he saw a member of the Goswami family carrying a fish that he had just bought at the fish market, the proverbial fish market. And he walked across the street and said to him, "You're so hard-hearted. So hard-hearted. Hypocrisy. Callous to the suffering, to the pain that the fish has experienced. And you just because you feel like you like that taste? How hard-hearted to cause such pain to others just because one likes the taste of something." Any other questions or comments?
You are still there, sin. Even mushrooms we should not take yet, but we know that.
What?
Even the mushrooms we should not take. Some people do take them. That's simple.
Not in the same way. But if we take, mushrooms are in the mode of ignorance. Yes. But everything that we eat, if we don't offer it to Krishna, Krishna explains, salva kilbishai, stena eva, you're a thief. And there's punishment if we don't offer what we eat to Krishna. So we don't offer things that are in the mode of ignorance. So we don't offer mushroomy foods to Krishna, and therefore it's sinful. But there is a time, there was a time actually, where Prabhupada told the devotees they could eat mushrooms. One time that I'm aware of. In France, and the farm, New Mayapur, the devotees had... they were growing naturally there, and Prabhupada said they could offer them because Krishna was providing them. But that's not the standard thing to eat them, eat mushrooms, because he was talking about self-sufficiency there. But it's not like eating animals. They're just tamaguni, very much in the mode of ignorance. Any other questions or comments? Okay, I'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, the holy names of the Lord ki jai. Nitya Gopi Manandaya.